Welcome to Locked On NFL, your daily podcast on the National Football League on the number one daily sports podcast network. Today's episode of Locked On NFL is brought to you by Built Bar. Remember, with promo code Locked On, you get $10 off your first box of Built Bars at builtbar.com. And speaking of building, you can build your own box of flavors of Built Bar, which is a really cool feature there at builtbar.com. Get yourself some snacks. All right, Matt, we are going to talk AFC East today, finishing up the draft reviews by division, AFC East. Before we get into those draft hauls for the Bills and the Dolphins and the Patriots and what team am I forgetting in the AFC East?
Jets.
The Jets. Yes, the Jets. One of my favorite drafts out there were the Jets. So I'm excited to talk about that haul. You've been working on some top offenses, top defenses around the NFL, right? So you want to jump into some offenses today here in segment number one, and then we'll get into those draft reviews, maybe save the defensive side of the ball for Friday's episode after our Twitter Thursday tomorrow. And by the way, you can hit me up at BD Peacock. Matt is at Williamson NFL. That's the place to get those Twitter Thursday questions in. So what do you think, offense today?
Yeah, this is what my plan is. Here, pull back the curtain as usual. We're going to make this a quick segment and just kind of go over these briefly, but I want you guys to, you know, think it over and give me a hard time. Write back to me tomorrow for Twitter Thursday why I'm wrong, why I'm crazy, and we can discuss it even further on Friday. Friday, we'll dig into the defenses. And this all came about because my Steelers show is every Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 4 to 6, and frankly, we're running out of things to talk about. So, you know, my co-host and I, Dale Lawley, said, let's pull up our top 10 offenses and see where the Steelers compare, you know, with Ben. And this obviously is not going to be Steeler related, but that's where it came from. So I have it here. And then a site that I write for, Yard Barker, I do a lot of videos for them. They said, well, let's do a video of your top five. So I figured let's spread the wealth over all my platforms and start talking about these guys.
Yeah, you put the work in. So I'm interested to hear what these top five offenses are. Let's get it going. Do you want to count them up from 5 to 1?
I'm going to do the just miss 6 to 10.
Okay.
How's that sound?
Yeah, I like it.
In order, I think people might be shocked by this one. I'm obviously projecting forward. Philly at 6 with receivers and a healthy Wentz and a really good O-line. Atlanta at 7, first-round picks galore. I think their passing game is going to be really, really strong. T-Bay at 8, cut down on the turnovers. They got a lot of weapons. New guy behind center, if you haven't heard. Titans at 9, who were really, really good last year, and I'm actually expecting them to kind of drop off a little. And then I went to Raiders at 10, but I got to say, from like 8 on, it gets a little hairy.
Yeah, the middle gets, I think, a little bit more difficult, and you could see some teams that could jump up. You can make an argument for a lot of teams. Philly's a big one, right, because of health and how they're put together, and they've added a bunch of speed this offseason. And I'm guessing that when you're ranking these, you're ranking, okay, this is a fully operational, fully healthy unit that we're ranking, right?
I'm not sure you and I have had this conversation, but I bring this up every year, several times between draft and camp opening. This is the time every team is eternally optimistic. Everyone will be healthier than last year. All your draft picks will hit. Nobody gets old. It's, you know, roses and unicorns. So, yes, I'm going to look at this through an optimistic lens. You know, Brady's going to be really good. Matt Ryan's not going to get old. Todd Gurley's knees are in good shape. You know, things that won't hold up. But that's the time of year we have. I think Philly's going to be quite good. And you want to get in the top five?
Yeah, let's do it. Who's number five?
The Saints, which probably seems a little low. Okay. I mean, they add Manny Sanders. I think they have more firepower than they had in recent years. I think it'll be the best offensive line in the league. I don't have much bad to say about the Saints. I just think the four ahead of them are better.
Well, I'm very interested now to hear who number four is, because I didn't put any deep thought into this, but off the top of my head, I was thinking, okay, Saints is at least top two or three. So who's number four then?
Your Niners, man.
Okay, well, I can't argue with that too much.
Well, I'm sure you don't have a qualm with that. I mean, it's just the play design and the Shanahan, you know, very quarterback friendly, but it's so run oriented and so well designed, and everything looks the same, and run after the catch and the use of fullback and Kittle and throw Ayuk into the mix. And, you know, I think San Fran could maybe even be higher.
Yeah, and this is the question I get a lot. Did the 49ers get better because they basically replaced all of their biggest needs in the draft, you know, one by trading for a veteran in Trent Williams to replace Joe Staley. They replaced Emmanuel Sanders with a first-rounder in Ayuk, and they replaced Buckner with a first-rounder in Javon Kinlaw. But just for the offense that we're talking about here, would you rather have an offense with Joe Staley and a veteran wide receiver next to Deebo Samuel like Emmanuel Sanders, or would you rather have Trent Williams, who could be an upgrade in the short term, but you don't know what you're going to get from a rookie jumping in there early like Brandon Ayuk? Do you like last year's offense or this year's offense? But the thing is, in 2020, you get Jimmy Garoppolo, hopefully his second full season as a starter, not coming off an ACL injury either.
Yeah, and I think that's something you bring up a lot that I regurgitate a lot that you say that being, I do think that being in the system longer pays off, and I think we'll see the best Jimmy yet. So I will take this year's offense over last year's offense for that reason, where the rest of it's kind of a wash.
Okay, number three.
I got the Baltimore Birdies at three.
Okay, very different style of offense. Yeah,
very unique offense, league MVP. Of course, it all starts with the running game, but unlike any other offense in the league, it starts with the quarterback as a runner. Everyone knows I'm a fan of Lamar as a passer as well. Just so difficult to game plan against, too.
And we just talked about Jimmy Garoppolo. How about as Lamar gets better as a thrower and as a passer in the NFL, which he will, and he's got all the arm talent in the world to go with that athleticism, when we see both of those things peak at the same time? I mean, it's scary. Baltimore's offense could absolutely be the best offense in the NFL, even though it's very different the way it looks, but it could get more traditional as he develops as a passer.
Exactly. And they have a little bit more weaponry, but, and maybe some people will figure them out a little, but it was a lethal offense last year.
Number
my
two.
Second one. This is going to shock people. Dallas. And people know that I've been kind of nerding out with the spreadsheet I've been teasing about. And yards per play on offense, Dallas averaged 6.5 yards per play, which is 0.3 more than anyone in the league last year. They were number one. I mean, KC was two. Baltimore was three. Titans, Niners, Raiders, Chargers, Saints, Bucks, Seattle are the top eight or nine or whatever. They're the ones that all average 5.8 and above. But Dallas was far and away number one, and now you add CeeDee Lamb, and I think McCarthy will have a positive effect. I mean, Elliott, and we know all the other guys in the, you know, that are there. I think Rob, you know, losing Travis Frederick would hurt a little, but not enough for me to knock him.
Yeah, losing Travis Frederick hurts, but you get another weapon like CeeDee Lamb, who I wouldn't be completely shocked if in 2 years he's actually the best wide receiver on the Cowboys. Yeah. It'll be interesting, and it's nice for him to be able to jump in and have to be maybe at most the number three receiver there. And, of course, you have Zeke and everything else on offense. It's still a very good offensive line. Connor Williams, we'll see how his health is, too, because that could be a big step back on the offensive line if both Williams and Frederick, you know, obviously Frederick is going to be out, but if Williams stays out for a long period of time as well into the 2020 season, that could be rough. So a health key on that offensive line and everybody else staying healthy is very important to keep Dak upright and keep that running game going strong. So that brings us to your number one offense in 2020 in the NFL.
Yeah, and I meant to mention too, I am a little worried about the Yonda retirement in Baltimore, but I think you probably figured it out. The Chiefs are number one. The rich get richer. You know, you add Edwards-Helaire, speed galore, elite quarterback, elite play caller, a nightmare to play against. I don't think anyone's going to argue with me on that one.
You can't argue with that at this point, no matter how good you feel about the other offenses in your top five, and I feel great about all of them. There was rumors before the draft that the Chiefs were making some calls and trying to trade up just in case Henry Ruggs slid a little bit. I kind of wanted that to happen. I want to see like how crazy with speed and Mahomes' arm that they can make that offense in Kansas City, even though it would be a pain in the ass to play against for all the other teams, including the 49ers, if they were to get back and meet him in a Super Bowl. I kind of wanted to see that.
Yeah, that certainly would be interesting for sure. And we mentioned earlier in the show that I have, you know, we're going to do defenses on Friday. I have not put that list together, but a couple of these top five teams might also have a top five defense. And I'm pretty sure your boys in San Fran are going to be one of them.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Then you start to see, okay, who are the bad boys on the block coming into 2020, and it might look a little bit similar, but the Dallas Cowboys, that number two, I think, was the most surprising ranking, but I can definitely see it too. I mean, they've got a ton of weapons, so as good as Dak Prescott can play, the rest of the offense can play with him. That'll be an interesting one. And you know what? It's hard for me to say. I might still put New Orleans over San Francisco, though.
Would you really?
Yeah, I think I might, just because I want... And maybe it's just me being too close. I'm more of a wait-and-see guy with the 49ers. I don't want to anoint them yet. A lot of people were really excited in 2018 for the Niners, and I was like, just wait. And then last year, they started winning games. It's like, they're not going to go undefeated, guys. But, man, they were pretty awesome all year long. So, but I'm going to wait and see how the new offense, you know, some new pieces there, and we'll see the wide receiver position. Last year, it was basically the same group with another rookie wide receiver. They needed to trade for a veteran. So that's one of the big keys for me, is how quickly Ayuk gets ready, or one of the other guys develops behind him and pushes him, and maybe somebody else wins that starting job next to Debo.
Yeah, but you got Kittle.
I mean, he's like, the number one.
That's such a small problem to have when Kittle is going to demand the ball as much as he does, and the running game's that good. I mean, you're worried about the third, fourth option in the passing game.
Kansas City, Dallas, Baltimore, San Francisco, New Orleans, Philly, Atlanta, Tampa Bay, Tennessee, Las Vegas. That was Matt Williamson's top 10 offenses. Hit me up at BD Peacock. Hit Matt Williamson up at Williamson NFL to let us know how you feel about those rankings. We'll do defense Friday, Twitter Thursday, tomorrow, the rest of this show devoted to AFC East draft review. This episode is brought to you in part by Built Bar. Built Bars are tasty, and Built Bars are healthy. If you're looking for that energy, you need a snack. This is ideal, the ideal snack for me, because it tastes good, but it's not heavy. It's not going to get stuck in your teeth. You can power one down and go do whatever you need to do. If it's work, if it's a workout, high in protein, low in sugar. That I can't stress this enough. Low in sugar. It's not dessert. It's actually good for you. But it tastes so good, it's like, how is there only 110 calories, 4 grams of sugar in this thing? This morning, trying to get some podcasts going, didn't have breakfast, so I went with the Mint Brownie Delight, which was fantastic. Only 110 calories, 15 grams of protein, and only 4 grams of sugar. So low calorie, low sugar, low carb, but high in protein, high in fiber, exactly what you need in a snack. And the best part is, if you go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code Locked On, you'll get $10 off your first order. Use promo code Locked On. That's one word, Locked On, for $10 off, and build your own box at BuiltBar.com. Buffalo Bills, who did not have a first round pick. You've got to include, I think, Stephon Diggs in this draft class somewhat. They've got to pay him a veteran salary so he doesn't get that rookie contract, but they fixed their problem at wide receiver. And it's interesting because a lot of teams that traded away their first-round picks, the team that got those picks drafted the same position that that they gave up in those trades, with the 49ers taking a defensive tackle and the Minnesota Vikings taking a wide receiver. But let's talk Bills draft in the second round, selecting A.J. Epenesa, defensive end out of Iowa, Zach Moss, running back in round 3 out of Utah, wide receiver Gabriel Davis in round 4. In the 5th round, Jake Fromm, quarterback out of Georgia. Very different quarterback to what they have as a starter, and I think a nice landing spot for Jake Fromm, and a nice little value, I think, in round 5 for them. Tyler Bass, 6th rounder, Georgia Southern kicker. Isaiah Hodgins, wide receiver out of Oregon State in round 6, and then round 7 they finished it off with Pittsburgh cornerback Dane Jackson. How do we feel about this, and how heavily do you weigh Stephon Diggs in this draft class, and how much does that change it?
It's massive. I mean, I think he's a great route runner, a true number one, is going to demand a lot of attention, will make John Brown's life easier. This roster is really starting to come together where they could afford to make such a splash, where it's not the slow build that it's been. And I really respect the way that they've built this team. Let's start from the bottom up. First of all, everyone knows in this draft class, the late round kicker punter, I'm on board with. He's going to make the team. He's going to save you some cap space. Fine. But I don't know anything about Tyler Bass. I just know he's from Georgia Southern. Kicking in Buffalo is a lot different than kicking in Georgia come December and January. So let's see if Mr. Bass can handle that. We shall see. Dane Jackson's a guy I saw a lot from Pitt. Hail to Pitt. I thought he'd go earlier than this, but he'll be a nice addition. As a seventh round pick goes, I think he'll make the team and he'll contribute. The two receivers, Gabriel Davis in the fourth and Isaiah Hodgins in the sixth, weren't two of my guys. You know, I mean, of just the receiver class, neither one of them was I like, that's my sleeper, or I want to get that guy on my dynasty team. They're okay. Fromm, to me, had to be a case of too good to pass up. We have a second or third round grade on him. It's not a need, but he's a super high character guy. And if he can be Garrett to Aikman, or better yet, Reich to Kelly, that would be tremendous. But again, a weak arm quarterback throwing the ball in Buffalo is a lot different than kicking at Georgia Southern or throwing with the Georgia Bulldogs. The top two, though, are very similar to me, Epinesa and Moss. They are big for their position. They're nasty. They're physical. They're not great testers. They fit the system. They fit the profile. They fit the city. Epinesa, they'll use them all over the defensive line. And Singletary's fine, but Moss is going to be the hammer.
Who are you buying in Dynasty there, Moss or Singletary?
I think it really hurts Singletary, just because I think Moss is going to get touchdowns. He's going pretty early in Dynasty drafts, but I have him ranked lower than where he's been going because I do think they love Singletary.
Yeah, that's tough. And they're not so dissimilar. I mean, they're shaped differently, obviously, but there's not an obvious, like, okay, here's the first down guy, here's the third down guy.
Right. Like, Singletary's more elusive, but neither one's fast. Singletary's not a super developed receiver. Moss is, you know, the contact balance power guy, but I do think they'll complement each other well, and he'll be a very welcome addition to that running game. What are your thoughts? I mean, did you feel strong about Hodgins or Davis? I didn't love either one of those receivers.
I liked Hodgins more, actually. The thing I do like about Hodgins is he tested really well. I mean, he's not a burner. He's only 4.61, I think, 40, but he tested really well in the agilities, and I think that bodes well for him to get open, and he had the best catch rate, if I'm not mistaken, in college football. So pure hands, pure ball skills. He can make some plays down the field, even though he's not fast, because of those ball skills and those pure hands. And I think he can get open better than he got credit for to be more of a possession type of a weapon. So I think he can carve out a role. I do like Hodgins a little bit, especially, I mean, late in the sixth round.
Yeah, of course, of course. All of a sudden, though, they got a pretty good group of receivers.
Yeah, and that's what they needed. So good on them. I like this Bills draft when you consider, and look, I like Stephon Diggs better than Justin Jefferson too. So to take the question out of developing a quarterback away with your first round pick, if you have the cap space, I'm all in on that trade too.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And again, it's a win now move. The division looks like it's for the taking at one point, finally. So give it a shot.
And with their second rounder, Epinesa, I mean, a month ago, he was getting mocked as high as 22 in round one.
Yeah, right. And they'll use him all over the line of scrimmage. He'll be an interior pass rusher. He'll probably never have 10, 12 sacks, but he'll be a favorite in Buffalo. I can promise you that.
High floor, and he'll probably have a better career than some of the more athletic players on the edge that were drafted in front of him.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Let's go to the Miami Dolphins, who were just a wild draft with so many draft picks and so many rumors and all those three first rounders. And props to Chris Greer, who... And you know what makes me mad? And I talked about this when we were doing some crossovers with Kyle Krabs, who does Locked On Dolphins on the 49ers show. And I'm mad at Chris Greer because I had talked about it. Remember at the Combine, and the word from then on was, it's all Justin Herbert for the Dolphins. It's Justin Herbert for the Dolphins. I was like, this is the smokescreen. Don't buy it. Don't buy it. The night before the draft, I did a mock draft on Locked On 49ers. I had the Dolphins taking Tua at pick 5, woke up in the morning on draft day, and I changed it. I smelled the smoke screen the whole time from Chris Greer, and I changed it the morning of the draft, and I bought into the rumors of them trying to move up to number 3, and I moved off of Tua for the first time the whole draft season, the morning of the draft. So I'm mad at myself. Props to Chris Greer. He finally got me, pulled off the smoke screen, didn't have to trade up, got his guy at pick 5. As for the rest of the draft, I don't know about the value. So pick 5 overall, Tua Tagovailoa, quarterback from Alabama. Pick 18 in round 1, Austin Jackson, USC offensive tackle. Noah Igbinoghene, corner from Auburn at the end of round 1, 30 overall after trading down from 26 with the Packers, who took Jordan Love. Round 2, Robert Hunt, Louisiana guard. Raquan Davis, defensive tackle from Alabama at 24 in the second round. Round three, Brandon Jones, safety from Texas. Round four, Solomon Kinley, Georgia guard. Jason Strobridge, I like this pick a lot in round five. North Carolina defensive lineman. Curtis Weaver, defensive end from Boise State. Another value there for a defensive end in round five. Round six, Blake Ferguson, LSU long snapper. And Malcolm Perry, that's a Williamson special there, long snapper in round six in the 2020 draft. And then round seven, Malcolm Perry, Navy wide receiver.
Yeah, and we talked already about the three first rounders. But my take after the first round was congrats to the Dolphins. They won the game of chicken. You know, they stood in the train tracks longer than their buddy, and they got their guy. They didn't have to cost a pick to get a potential franchise-changing player in Tua. So congrats on that. I'm kind of with you throughout the draft that I'm not sure that, you know, I forget how you said it, that I'm not sure they got value throughout the draft. But one thing I did say after round one was they took premium positions, quarterback, left tackle, corner. You know, I mean, things that cost a lot on the open market. I don't think that's an accident. The Steeler fan of me goes, I'd still rather have Minka than the 18th pick, Austin Jackson. I mean, yeah. So such is life, but that's, you know, looking 2020 vision, you know, so to speak. But there's obviously a theme here of big, powerful people, you know, Robert Hunt, Raquan Davis, Kinley, Eric Flowers. I mean, people, the line of scrimmage guys, even their edge players, Lawson and Ogba. I mean, they're not finesse speed dudes. Weaver's another edge guy I thought was good value. Malcolm Perry, the last pick's kind of like the Blake Ferguson long snapper pick. Is he's a gadget guy. Okay, you probably don't have somebody like him. That's worth a shot in the end of the draft. But long snapper, right up my alley. Brandon Jones, to me, was a little early at 70 overall. I didn't quite see that. And there was other safeties I liked better.
Yeah, all those picks in the top 70, and I felt like they could have gotten a little bit more impact. It hurts even more when you see how the first round fell. They're sitting at 18. A guy like CeeDee Lamb goes one pick ahead of him, and the last of the four offensive tackles goes, five spots ahead of him. And so the fact that they had all these picks, they weren't able maybe just to trade up a little bit to get that value, and they could have probably still stayed with their third first round pick. So that's the only thing I would knock them. But overall, they added a lot of players, and it's pretty clear after they got their quarterback, they wanted to protect that quarterback, and they wanted to add to their defense with a lot of draft picks. And a lot of people thought maybe wide receiver was something that they were targeting. It's pretty clear they didn't really care that much. They didn't draft a wide receiver until round seven.
Yeah, and tight end as well. Like, Gesicki's one of my breakout type guys. I think Preston Williams is a breakout guy. You know, their pass catchers in general, they showed a lot of confidence in. You know, to your point, though, and again, this is some hindsight is 2020 here, is that, I mean, you take Jackson at 18. If you were to sacrifice the 111th pick, Kinley, or even the 70th pick, Jones, and Jackson all of a sudden is Tristan Wirfs, you know, how much different would we be, you know, looking at this draft?
Look out for Jason Strobridge, fifth rounder. I like that he can play inside, he can play outside in that multiple defense. That's a pick I like in round five. All right, let's get to the rest of the AFC East. We've got the New England Patriots and the New York Jets. Guys and gals, start the competition today with people important in your mom's life. Mother's Day is her Super Bowl, so celebrate this Mother's Day by scoring her favorite gift of the day. Your mom will be able to travel in her mind to exotic India, sample the food, and laugh at the perils of raising a teenager in 1950s India through a new book of fiction called The Henna Artist. By the way, it's Reese Witherspoon's book club's pick for May. Then anytime in May, post a picture of your Mother's Day recipient holding the ebook or book on Instagram or Facebook and tag the author at The Alka Joshi. A donation of 4 meals per post, up to 10,000 meals, will go to Feeding America. So guys and gals, buy The Henna Artist today at your favorite bookseller, including Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Walmart, Costco, and Target, and make mom the ultimate winner in your family. Let's go to the Pats here. And man, to add to just the entire roster that's becoming a no-name roster in New England without Tom Brady, it's getting harder and harder to name all of the starters there, you know, and who knows how long Joe Thuney and Julian Edelman are going to be around in New England. And just to add to that idea, they go out and probably shocked a lot of Pats fans that don't pay very close attention to the draft and to the Senior Bowl. And in round two, after trading out of round one, they picked up Lenore Ryan, small school safety Kyle Duggar, who I actually think is a fantastic pick. I like Kyle Duggar a lot. He ended up being my number two safety. Josh Uche, another Senior Bowl guy out of Michigan, stand-up pass rusher at the end of round two. Round three, Anthony Jennings, another stand-up pass rusher out of Alabama. Devin Asiasi, back-to-back tight ends here in round three. So they went edge rusher, tight end. They went Devin Asiasi out of UCLA and Dalton Keene out of Virginia Tech at tight end in round three. In round five, Justin Rohrwasser out of Marshall, a kicker, a little early for a kicker, even earlier than the sixth or seventh rounder. Went to round five with the kicker after a sixth round punter last year. Special teams, obviously important to Bill Belichick. Michael Onwenu, guard from Michigan in round six. Justin Heron, a tackle from Wake Forest in round six. Cash Maluia, who I'd never saw a snap of in the pre-draft.
Don't know a thing about him.
Okay, I was wondering. I wanted the Williamson scouting report. I guess we're not going to get that either. linebacker from Wyoming, so someone have to do some work on. And then center Dustin Woodard out of Memphis in round seven. That's the Pats haul. A lot of picks, no first-rounders.
Right, and it's funny because I didn't thought of this until you mentioned the Rohrwasser pick at 159 overall, the kicker from Marshall. And this is our third AFC East team where we've had a late, you know, specialist. Mm-hmm. But this isn't so late. You know, fifth round kicker is pretty darn high.
Middle of round five, too.
Yeah, right. And Bill absolutely puts a premium on special teams. And actually, everyone they picked ahead of Rohrwasser is going to help on teams this year, too. I mean, I can promise you that they'll make their bones there. It's an interesting draft, as always, with the Patriots. And he knows where his bread is buttered, and that's on defense. And they're going to try to be elite still there and win close games. And I think Jennings is his Ninkovich Van Noy smart edge setter, quality player, maybe a team captain someday. Uche's similar, but to me a lot better, a lot more dynamic. I'm really excited that he fell there. Winovich fell there last year. Duggar, I think they see, you know, in the box, Harrison-like safety. I'm glad they finally addressed tight end and they doubled up, and we've seen that them do that before. I'm not exactly predicting the same results, but I was super high on Asiasi, and I bet he can. I'm not going to say he's going to be a star, but I don't be shocked if he's a top 10 tight end 3 years from now or so. That wouldn't blow me away. Frankly, their sixth and seventh rounders, I don't know much about, but three offensive linemen for depth and Cash from Wyoming. I'm sure he'll be a special team or two.
Yeah, and for those out there who didn't know Duggar, were upset by the Kyle Duggar pick, don't be upset. This guy can fly 4.4 speed. He's 6'1.5", 217. He's a thumper. He can get downhill. He does have some development to do, but he showed up at the Senior Bowl and was one of the better players there after dominating at Lenore Ryan. So a lot to work with Kyle Duggar, and like you mentioned, can play special teams like a monster early in his career. Actually, he's a return guy, too. He took kicks to the house as a return man, so has that athleticism. And maybe I'm wrong here. Maybe it's just something I started paying more attention to recently, but I think in recent history in the draft, teams are doing something I really like more often, which is instead of drafting one guy early and thinking they're done with the position, going back multiple times and attacking a position hard like the Patriots did here. Two edge guys and then two tight ends in a row.
Yeah, and I think that's smart. I mean, especially if you're a team that doesn't have a bazillion needs. I mean, the Eagles just attacking receiver left and right. And if you hit 50%, you're going to be more than fine. Makes a lot of sense. I mean, shockingly, the Patriots tight end situation was as bad as any in the league last year. And I think it's also noteworthy, they turned the 23rd pick into the 37th and 71st, which all the the charts out there will tell you is a big win.
Yes, absolutely. That's a win value wise there. And like we mentioned there, you draft two guys at a position because half the time these guys are going to suck. That's just the reality. It's a coin flip a lot of times in the draft. And so not only did you draft two guys at one position, you added an extra pick with that trade down to give yourself more darts to throw at the board and give yourself a better chance to hit on some players, which I think is key. And I think it's one of the reasons why the Patriots have been so good for so long, even though they haven't actually drafted all that great. in recent history. Let's finish this up with the
quick. I just want to, the Patriots are different. I mean, like, if any other team would have brought in this draft class, I probably would have been harsher on them, but they've afforded themselves obviously a massive benefit of the doubt. And it wouldn't shock me if Duggar, Uche, and Asiasi are all well exceed their draft position.
Yeah, very fun team to follow. The New England Patriots post Tom Brady. We'll see how Bill Belichick coaches up that group of players with a lot less star power than we're used to in New England. The New York Jets, this will be a fun one to follow as well, because when you look back at drafts in a few years, I think this is one of the clear A-grade drafts in 2020, but there's some boom or bust here as well. So this draft class could go in a lot of ways, even though I really love it and I think they got value and I think it was worth the boom with a lot of the picks and where they got a lot of these players. It started off with pick 11 in round one, and this was a pivot point in round one because teams weren't sure, was this going to be part of the offensive tackle run or was this going to be part of the wide receiver run? With all the tackles and offensive linemen that the Jets added in free agency, they stuck with the line and they wanted to protect and they wanted to help out their quarterback, which I love. Like, Joe Douglas, thank you. I think Sam Darnold's like, thank you, GM. I have a GM that knows what he's doing right now. So a great first draft, I think, for Joe Douglas. They went Mekhi Becton in round one. They came back in round two, got a really nice value in another boom or bust type of wide receiver out of Baylor, Denzel Mims. Round three, Ashton Davis, a speedy safety from Cal, adding to a really strong safety group already in New York. Makes you think one of those guys might be traded. And Marcus May and Jamal Adams have both been the subject of trade rumors. Jabari Zuniga from Florida, defensive end in round three. LaMichael Perine, running back from Florida in round four. Coming back in round four with a quarterback, James Morgan, out of Florida International. Cameron Clark with their third, fourth-round selection. A tackle from Charlotte who will most likely play guard in the NFL. Bryce Hall, a smoking value for an injured cornerback from Virginia in round five. And then Braden Mann, punter from Texas A&M in round six. Every team in the AFC East drafted themselves a specialist on day three.
Yeah, I think they did it for me. They saved the best for last. There's late round kicker, punter, long snapper. Gotta love it. Nice work, AFC East. Right up my alley. So I'm glad we talked about that. I mean, I didn't realize that all four did that until just now. Another little note, and I saw this firsthand when the Steelers drafted Mason Rudolph and James Washington, both from Oklahoma State. A couple teams have done this. You know, in the third and fourth round, they get Zuniga, who I really love. I think he could be an answer to their problems. And Perine, who I think will be a quality backup to Lev Bell. But why I brought that up is they're both from Florida. And just think of the human side of things, folks. I mean, going from Florida to the Big Apple is very different for these young men, and it's nice to have a buddy.
No, that's key, and I wonder if there's some connection, because I think we saw a lot of that, and we saw a lot of teams leaning on some close ties they had to colleges and really good relationships mm-hmm. that they could trust the scouting report, trust the background report, more importantly, from some of the college coaches, and so I've seen a lot of that going on, and I don't know if there is a connection there with the Jets front office or coaching staff and the Florida coaching staff, but I'd be willing to bet there is some sort of connection where they were able to believe in that. But man, they could go huge with Becton. They could go huge with Mims. Ashton Davis is starting caliber, speedy center field type of safety. But Bryce Hall, man, this is a top 50 pick, I think, if he didn't really have a gnarly ankle injury. And I think it was the rechecks. They weren't able to check out that ankle is why Bryce Hall fell like a rock in the draft. But I love that selection. We're going to see some teams that got smoking deals on players that were a little bit banged up in the draft process and teams didn't feel confident drafting them higher than they should have, as high as they should have been drafted. And then there's probably some teams that draft guys that didn't have enough and still went for it and maybe get burned on that. So that's going to be another fun thing to track as far as information and medical from this draft. But man, I think that's a slam dunk draft to get value early, really help out your young quarterback, and then get really good value later. Cameron Clark's another one I like, guard from Charlotte in round four.
Yeah, I love the way you described the Hall situation for 158th pick overall. This time last year, he was atop all the corner lists, you know, and you might as well roll the dice. Even if he has to sit out a year, it's worth it probably. So at a premium position with his size, that's great. And I thought Mims might have been in the same boat. I mean, my spidey sense was tingling. Like, did he fail a drug test? Does he have an injury? Why is he falling? I thought he'd certainly be a first-round pick. thought the Eagles might have taken him in first round or the Vikes. Mm-hmm. And I haven't heard anything since. And this is about where DK Metcalf and all those other receivers last year went. It's just too many receivers and some guy has to fall. And I think the Jets really benefited with that. That's the downfield Robbie Anderson guy they need.
Smart way to play it for the Jets to be able to use the value of the wide receiver and the depth of that position group in this draft class, find that value in round two, going with the offensive tackle with big upside in round one. And like you mentioned with Bryce Hall, even if he is hurt a little bit, maybe he doesn't quite have that speed he used to have. He's smart. He's big. He could be a starting safety in the NFL too. So he has a parachute, even if the ankle doesn't turn out as positive as you hope after that injury. So fun draft.
Ashton Davis actually had some injury stuff too.
Yeah, like, that's another reason. I mean,
his tape could be late first round tape. He can fly.
Right. And he didn't get a chance to throw down some really good times at the combine and think might have wowed some people. He's a track guy. He ran the hurdles and so athleticism is something that would have shined for him and he didn't get a chance to show that. So he might not even been there in round three. You're right.
Right.
All right. We love the Jets draft. And I think there are some good, really good things about this AFC East draft class. And it's going to be fun to watch this division without Tom Brady. And probably for the first time in a very long time, most people will not pick the Patriots to win the AFC East. So gives the Bills, the Jets even, and of course, the Miami Dolphins an opportunity to go win that division. Knock off Bill finally for once. But you know what? I would not count Bill Belichick out. Would you, Matt?
I certainly would not. I can't wait to watch how the Patriots season unfolds. None of these teams made my top 10 offenses, although I could see Buffalo, you know, making being in that conversation. And I also think the Jets are going to be better than respectable on offense.
Sam Darnold had a winning record last year in the games he played, and he missed some games. So he was 7-6 as a starter. I mean, they weren't a top 10. They weren't picking in the top 10, and most people would look at the Jets and think that was a garbage team, but you know they were good enough to where they didn't even pick in the top 10. Sam Darnold missed some games. They were awful in the games he was out, actually had a winning record when he was in there, and they just gave him a lot of help.
Yeah, and I mentioned my yards per play metric. They were last. They were 32 on offense last year. They won't be again. Falk just destroyed them.
Well, by the way, we got to wrap this up. We're going way longer, but I do want to mention – props to Frank Gore, 16th season in the NFL. He'll be 37 years old, signed a one-year deal to be running mates with Le'Veon Bell there in the New York Jets backfield. So, and by the way, Frank Gore Jr. starts his freshman year at, I believe, Mississippi. Is it Mississippi State? Anyway,
I don't know.
Frank Gore Jr., college running back freshman in 2020. His dad's still going at 37 years old. Pretty amazing.
The Frank only has to hang on 3 or 4 more years and he can be with his son in the league. His third AFC East team in 3 years. So maybe New England's up next year for Frank.
I like it. And he's still got to sign that, that 1 year contract with the 49ers to end his career too, or the 1 day contract more likely to retire as a 49er. That's definitely going to happen.
I love it.
All right. We'll be back tomorrow, Twitter Thursday. Hit me up at BD Peacock. Find Matt at Williamson NFL. There is a tweet out there asking for questions that you can reply to, and we'll answer those tomorrow right here, Locked On NFL.